Listen in. It's time to talk about transitions into management positions or internationalization in exotic destinations. We could parlay over testing and progressive applications or talk relationships, but mainly please don't leave for other stations.
There are many fun and pretty useful things to know. You might even learn some on the Angular Plus Show.
Welcome to the Angular Plus Show, where app developers of all disciplines gather to share their insights and experiences, and hopefully shed some light that will help you in your journey. I'm your host, Lara Newsom. Let's get started. Hey, it's Lara with the Angular Plus Show. Do you feel like you spend all of your time staring at code? Is your closest coworker an actual cat? Are you a little worried you'd forgotten how to speak human words? I know I am. That's why I'm really looking forward to this year's NG Conf. Not only do they gather the absolute greatest minds in the industry under one roof, but they also create a fun, safe environment for developers to connect. You can meet us, the panelists, as well as many of our guests. For tickets and to find out more, go to ngconf.org. That's ng-conf.org.
Ready to accelerate your Angular app development? Infragistics has you covered with the fastest Angular charts and grids. A complete library of Angular native, material-based UI components. Ignite UI for Angular includes more than 60 high-performance charts and a high-performance data grid that renders millions of data points without sacrificing performance and is fully compatible with Angular 13. With the all-new WYSIWYG drag-and-drop app builder, you can design and build Angular apps up to 10 times faster using real UI components. Generate pixel-perfect, production-ready Angular or Blazor code in just a single click. Visit www.infragistics.com/products/ignite-ui-angular.
Welcome to this very exciting first episode of the Angular Plus Show. I'm your host, Brian Love. Now, you might have noticed that I said Angular Plus Show because we're changing the name. Why are we changing the name, Jennifer?
Because just Angular cannot encapsulate all the things that interest us and live in our heart.
You also might notice that I'm not Frosty. Although, I kind of, do I look like Frosty-ish?
No. I mean, sometimes you guys wear matching tracksuits, and then
that is
the
true.
Resemblance. And
that
then,
is true. When we both got our Adidas gear on, that it's hard to dispel. I mean, other than the beard, but... So we wanted to take a quick moment and introduce all of you to what we are rebranding as the Angular Plus Show. And we wanted to give an opportunity to introduce all of the new people that are going to be joining us on this journey. So Jennifer, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your story, and then we'll go from there.
My story, I mean, like, are we starting from childhood here? You want to hear about five-year-old Lego sculptures?
It was 2 a.m. in the hospital. What happened? Go.
16-hour labor. Actually, I don't remember how many hours they told me it was. Probably more, just to like make me more obedient as a child. But
of course,
no. But let's fast forward a couple of years to Jennifer in high school, bored as an AP student, therefore screwing around on the computer with GeoCities and MySpace.
Oh yeah.
And like these were the early days, so Halo 2 had just come out on Xbox Live, right?
Nice.
And so you get into a clan, and your clan couldn't possibly be legit. Unless you had a website talking about how legit your Halo clan is. So that was definitely my foray into web development, was building silly things like that, or, you know, pimping out my MySpace page, Zanga, because I was an angsty teenage girl who didn't know how to socialize. So my Zanga page held a lot of that.
Zanga?
Oh, come on. Yeah.
No.
What?
Don't know. I don't know what Zanga.
Oh God. Do you know what LiveJournal is? Clearly, you are a much more well-adjusted teenager than I was, and everybody listening to this podcast, I hope, is screaming at you, being like, "Oh my God, Brian, how did you miss this part of our coming of age on the internet?" But it was like an online journal. Like an online diary, and you could like code it and like do your own HTML and JavaScript,
nice.
Like falling stars in the background. And,
fantastic.
Right. And even in all of this, nobody was like, hey, you know, you can do that for a job. So anyway, I went to school for graphic design and business management. And graduated in 2009 when the economy was complete shite and nobody was hiring. And so I did a lot of freelancing work. Yeah. So that was kind of my pathway into things. As I was a designer, I could do a little bit of HTML, a little bit of CSS. And so worked at a bunch of small mom and pop shops, bunch of different places, and then worked with a fairly narcissistic CEO who at one time at 7 o'clock in the morning cornered me in the office when I came in and had me crying in the bathroom downstairs. And so that afternoon,
wait, in the bathroom?
Well, no, he didn't corner me in the bathroom. It was like this long, narrow hallway, and his office was at the end. And I was like normally one of the first people in the office, and I came in and he just like cornered me and just was like laying into me and just saying like horrible, like whatever. So I'm like downstairs in the bathroom, bawling my eyes out. One of the sales chicks comes to check on me. I updated my resume. A recruiter got a hold of me and was like, "You're making how much? Oh, honey. And started lining me up with some interviews. And from one of those, I landed my first full-time, like just developer only role. Yeah. And so it was kind of an epic journey from there. Cause these were the days where, you know, you got hired as a web developer. That was your job. And that meant you knew HTML, you knew CSS, you could probably implement a jQuery plugin. And this was right at the time where we were starting to, you know, really push the bounds of JavaScript, building single page applications and starting to learn about that. So that was my journey into tech.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then you talk about journey into Angular, Kansas City, where I'm from, a lot of .NET going on. And so Angular was one of the JavaScript frameworks that picked up speed because it felt very safe. And so there was a lot of job opportunities there. And then somewhere along the way, I founded Kansas City Women in Technology, which is a nonprofit to grow the number of women in technology careers in Kansas City. That really blew up, created like a huge community out of that. And you know what happens when you launch an organization is people expect you to speak publicly. This was news to me. This is not something my brain had like wrapped around.
You had not done any public speaking before this?
Not really. Not in any like professional sense. Like I had done panels at like gaming conferences. I can go like into a tangent about this website we build called fatuglyorslutty.com, but that's for another episode.
Wait, is it still available? Say that again.
No, we took it down. It's fatuglyorslutty.com. We used to archive
is that like a sexist hot or not messages. Clone?
No, we used to chronicle like sexist messages people would get on Xbox Live and then like expand it out to other platforms. And the joke was, oh, well, when guys message me, I'm always fat, ugly, or a slut. And so we would do that. We would index their gamer tag. So if they're like trying to like build their brand or their montage or whatever, you Google their gamer tag, it comes up with this awesome abuse they've sent to women. And, okay, so we just did that tangent anyway. So cycling back, had never really done any professional speaking and was terrified, and I was like, all right, how do I get over this? I'm going to submit to technical conferences. That sounds like a great way to get over the fear of public speaking. And then a couple of years later, started speaking at ngconf, got sucked into the community, and now here I am on this podcast.
That's right. And so you've been doing the podcast for how long?
Oh, when did
2 years? When did we start this thing?
I think Angular Show is like about 2 years. And then we had been together on a platform that will not be named for a different Angular podcast for maybe like a couple, 8 months before that.
Yeah. Very cool. So when you first got started in your career and, or, you know, kind of into this wonderful world of web development, what were some challenges that you kind of faced early on?
Well, I was self-taught. I didn't have a computer science background. And so there was definitely like a lot of fundamentals I was missing, but also like, this was the time of like, there was no Codecademy. There was, you know, a little bit on Google. There were much more rampant assholes on Stack Overflow. And so there wasn't, you had to learn a lot. And I feel like the culture wasn't built around teaching either. And so I worked with a lot of those developers who had years more experience than me, would rewrite the code base over the weekend. And the rest of us would be like, okay, how do we adapt to this? Like, we have to go and learn this thing. overnight and support this kind of work. So I faced a lot of challenges, like as a junior developer, before like a junior developer concept even existed, not having a lot of senior support and not having a tech community that was like, oh, you know what's really great? Seniors helping juniors, pair programming. So really had to do things the hard way.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So when you were going, now let's scrub the timeline back. When Jennifer was growing up, perfect.
That's a terrible noise.
Did you want to be a developer or like do software when you got older? Or were you like, what were your hopes and dreams?
God, I wanted to be so many things. Like I loved animals. So I kind of wanted to be a veterinarian, but I couldn't handle animals to sleep. And like, I knew that like very coherently.
Not a good day. On the job.
Yeah. So I wanted to do that. And one time I was like really into being a fashion designer, which is like a joke. Cause I can barely dress myself today. I'm wearing sushi pajamas right now. God, what other things? I was very like pro like women's rights. So I was always attracted to like spaces that were like male dominated and had a lot of, oh, women can't do this narrative. But the computer stuff like
ended up there, right? That's so good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's just like it was a very organic like pathway into tech. It wasn't like I enjoyed stuff, but there wasn't enough narrative being like, this is a career path for you. Like from adults anywhere. So
So what's one of the things, what made you stick with the Angular community? There's a lot of tech communities out there you get plugged into. I mean, what kind of like, what's one thing for you that you just kind of comes to your mind in terms of, this is why I like hanging out with these people?
There's a lot of passion and a lot of people are really, really excited. And like some people who know me know this, but I had done a lot of tech conferences before I had done an Angular conference. And like when I have done more focused, like tech only versus like tech agnostic conference tracks, like I have not enjoyed the experience. They've been like just people with this like narrow focus and they don't understand we're multifaceted, multidimensional people who can talk about our love for Angular or talk about our love for design systems or talk about brewing kombucha. And so I was like, I'm going to do the Angular conference. I hope it's not going to be a bunch of tryhards. And then it was an amazing community. Comes down to community.
I got to say, and I'm going to kind of lift you up here a little bit, Jennifer, but you've been such a huge part of the community over the last couple of years. I personally want to say thank you. I mean, a lot of your talks I've enjoyed attending. I learned stuff from your talks. You're inspirational. I've really enjoyed getting to be with you on the podcast for the last couple of years, just getting to know you. And I think for everybody listening, Jennifer she really puts a lot of heart into what you do. And so we want to thank you for that. And it's been a really fun time having you on the podcast. And I'm really excited about this next phase with the Angular Plus show.
I am too. I love hosting with you and vice versa. Every time I'm like, what's this weird, bizarre edge case in Angular? Like, what was the one thing on your blog that you helped me out with a while ago? Getting like cert signing or something that I just had no context in. Yeah. Like, what does Brian have to say about this? He's going to save my butt on this. So yes. Yeah. Yes.
So appreciate you. I know you got to run here in a minute, but anything else you want to share with the community as we kind of embark on this next journey?
Can I help with the transition into our new journey?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm really, really excited with who we get to bring on board to our team to share the Angular Plus show love. So we have two new panelists that will be joining us and can't wait to kick things off. So Nicole, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hey everyone. Yeah. My name is Nicole Oliver and I have been a developer for the past like 10 years or so. Been in the Angular community for about 5 years. And when I started off my career, I was really interested more in like design over development. When I was in high school, I was really into like making comics and illustration, and I wanted to be an illustrator when I grew up. I did some like static web design, just kind of like hand coding. My dad taught me, and I thought like I wouldn't be able to actually get into like programming and computer science because there was a lot of math involved, and I wasn't very good at math. I went into college, got a degree in studio art, And I ended up like starting at a, in like a small shop at the university that I worked at. And I was lucky to have like a mentor that kind of helped me learn some programming on the job. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went from like doing static websites to learning to program mm-hmm. over the course of 5 years, which was a really great opportunity for me. I feel really lucky now because I know that not everybody gets that opportunity. So that's how I kind of started out. And then I went from that university to Nintendo for a year, and then I started working at Narwhal.
Nice.
Yeah. And I've been with Narwhal for about 3 years now.
I was going to ask, were you bad at math, or did you think you were supposed to be bad/not like math?
It's a great question, because in middle school, I feel like I was really good at math. I've always been kind of like more, like I leaned more towards visual learning. And so I really loved like geometry and like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But when I got into kind of like algebra and calculus, I started to kind of fall off.
Because I feel like I wasn't good at math, or I hated math when I was younger, because I like, part of it was the girl narrative. And then when I got into programming, like there's so many logic pieces that I absolutely love. Yeah. And so I wonder how much of my perception of math was the narrative that we were given.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I feel like it was more the format. I didn't really like doing these like problems over and over that like didn't really seem to have like an applicable, like the thing that I really love about programming is like you work on a thing and then you see magic happen, you know? It's a very like it feels like a craftsman sort of thing rather than very theoretical.
Yeah. So you worked at Nintendo.
I did.
Are you a gamer, Nicole?
I am. That's kind of like a hobby that I have, and how I met my partner in university. I was into making games and I would do what like all the art and animation. Sorry, say it again.
What kind of games, like 2D side scrollers?
Yeah, we did some like 2D platformers. That was primarily what we did because it's kind of got a lower barrier to entry. We also made like a like pirating game. It was kind of like broadsides combat, and that was in 3D. Oh,
I thought you meant like pirating of games. I was like,
no. Like a pirate game.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say that.
Yeah, it was popular game, at the time.
Like our making game.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a game that came out really soon after that called Sea of Thieves. It was basically the same game that made like way, way better than we could have made it.
They copied you. You gotta get those trademarks.
That's what we told ourselves.
You gotta get those patents and trademarks in. You gotta get that IP.
Yeah, but now I just I play games, primarily like puzzle and adventure games, like Breath of the Wild is one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's such a great game. I feel like I'm so close to beating it. I think I have one Ganon left.
Really?
So, yeah, I just haven't had enough time to, anyways. Yeah. Right there.
to beat Ganon.
Right.
That's the last
threshold. It's the last one, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of like, I'm curious, you know, with Jennifer's story, what was something that you kind of struggled on early on in your career?
I think that, I mean, actually, there's like something that I have struggled with for my entire career. And like, I don't know, I still think about it a lot, is that I consider myself very much on the like threshold between designer and developer. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I do a lot more like programming now that I did at the beginning of my career. And, you know, finding a balance between those things, like sometimes you can find places where that skill is very necessary, and sometimes sometimes it's not as much of an advantage. There are places, especially larger organizations, where like that communication between those two sides of development and like creating a product are like that's something that like is really great, because communication is such a key part of development, right? I think that's something that I am like constantly thinking about, at least, because it is like such an interesting facet of like developing one's career.
Yeah. No, I think it's really interesting. I think there's probably a lot of demand because there's a lot of people that are developers that really can't do or very, you know, struggle with design.
Yeah.
So bridging that gap is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun.
Are you good at using Figma?
Recently I hadn't really done much like work in Figma before and prototyping, because like when I was doing a lot of design, I was really making a lot of my, I was making a lot of my designs in Illustrator initially.
Gotcha.
And then
so like the real app, not
Figma. Well, it's actually not good for prototyping because you get really like into the, you don't have a lot of the magic that Figma provides. But as I got like deeper into my career, like I found that it was just easier to like develop in browser and design in browser. And that's kind of what I did.
That's awesome. So you were at this college, the university, kind of got started into programming, and then you did a year at Nintendo, and then now you're with Narwhal. Tell us a little bit about how's that going.
It's fun. You know, it's really interesting to be in consulting, because you get exposed to so many different types of projects, and how so many different people are looking at the same types of problems and solving them different ways. Mm-hmm. I've felt like consulting has been like a huge boon in my career, being able to have that exposure, and just being able to like meet developers and see like, you know, what kind of problems are they facing and all that. And we also, I'm on the NX Cloud team. So we have a product that sits on top of NX, and it allows you to like access a distributed cache, and we provide some like some UI that allows you to like analyze your data. And that's been really fun for me because I get to work on data visualization, which is something I've always been really excited about, but haven't that's had a lot of opportunity to explore in my career. So that's what I'm excited about right now. Yeah,
that's very cool. So how'd you get in? So you got plugged in to Angular. How was it through Nintendo, or were you guys doing Angular and Nintendo, or
It was through the university that I was working at. I had a mentor there who was, he had like kind of seen how Angular was developing like in the RC in the RC stages, and he was really excited about it. Like as we were looking at, like, we were working with like Java servlets, and so for the first, I want to say like 2 years that I was working with that shop, we were doing everything, all our templating with JSPs, and we were looking at like SPA options, and Angular just seemed like a really cool opportunity at that time. And so I kind of spearheaded like the effort of like trying to get into Angular in that shop, and like kind of create like a little like design system for the shop and that kind of thing.
Very cool. So this was Angular V2 or whatever we call it now, just Angular, right?
Yes. We didn't do anything with AngularJS.
Have you written AngularJS?
I have been in code bases with AngularJS, but I haven't really written a lot myself.
As a consultant, it might be hard to avoid it, right?
You're just
like, oh, that's still there.
Yeah, because there's a lot of shops that are still using AngularJS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Very cool. What are you excited about with the Angular Plus show?
Well, I mean, I see this as like a great opportunity to be able to like, well, just explore like more topics with people, but also to meet like a lot of people are doing really cool stuff in the community. I mean, I've been a listener of the Angular Plus show the Angular show for a long time. And it's, you know, it's always, I feel like I always learn a lot when I'm listening to the show. So I'm glad to be able to participate too.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, doing this the last couple of years, it's certainly a time commitment, but one of the things that I really love is just getting to meet people and then just learn various topics. Like, I haven't really dived into micro front ends. Like I just don't have any clients that use like MFEs or haven't had a need for it yet, but I love going and like listening to people talk about it and, you know, dive deep into single spa or, you know, how NX uses it and all these things. And so it's so, like it's great for, I think, just kind of knowing some of those things. Now, with that said, it's not like I could go and just pick it up and just like instantly do it, but I'm at least inspired to know a little bit about it.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun, for sure. So
yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, we are very excited to have you join the team here on the Angular Plus show. Thank you for your commitment and kind of joining us as we do this. So for the listeners, we're going to have some new panelists, like we've already mentioned. So Nicole is going to be one of the new people joining us. And then we also are very excited to announce that Lara Newsom is coming on board as well.
Hi. So I'm Lara Newsom, and I'm going to be a recurring panelist here on the Angular Plus show. So I'm really excited about that. So I guess we're going to start with where I got started and all that business.
let's do the whole thing.
Jump in.
Lara, so, age 12, go.
Oh my gosh, Lara, age 12, was a giant nerd, but she loved roller skating and you know.
Wait, roller skating or roller blading?
Roller skating, because roller blades had not really been invented yet.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, rollerblading sort of came around. I mean, they were probably invented, but in Iowa in the mid 80s, like, it was all about roller skating. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the roller rink that I used to go to was owned by this family, the Muses, and two of the fastest speed skaters in the United States were their sons. And so it was like so cool.
Like ice skate speed skaters?
No, roller skate
skaters.
Yeah.
Wait,
so like
this is a thing.
Yeah.
Is this an Olympic sport?
I actually don't know. I feel like it has to be. I mean, it's just as difficult as ice skating. So, you know, it's like, yeah. Huh. Yeah, that was like when I was a kid, like my dreams were to be like, I wanted to be a speed skater. I wasn't like particularly fast because I also wanted to do like figure skating, but I wanted to do it in speed skates. So I was sort of like that. That kid.
Feels like they'd be heavy, like the
they were the triple... and they have no ankle support. And yeah, like I remember we had this one instructor that I loved so much, and she was wonderful. And then she moved to California when she got married, and her brother took over, and his name was Johnny D, and he was this like
wait, stop right there. Johnny D.
And he was like this 6'3", like total hippie guy. He had like a big old head of dreadlocks. He always smelled like patchouli. And you know, he's like, all right, show me what you got. And we're like, all right. And so we put on True Colors by Cyndi Lauper, because that's what our song was too. And we start doing our thing. And I swear to God, it was the like record scratch, like, arr! And he's like, stop, this is crap. And then he put on like organ music and made us skate to that.
Oh my goodness.
I did not see the twist
there. Yeah. No, it was a very weird experience. And then he told us we couldn't figure skate in our speed skates, and then that was the end of my figure skating career.
I'm so sorry.
It was for the better.
I feel like we're reliving trauma. I really didn't mean to go to this. I'm sorry. I just wanted you to introduce yourself to the audience.
Now, well, if you don't understand my roller rink trauma, then you just like, you know, you need that as a baseline.
You should bring your roller skates to NGConf this year.
You know,
we go zipping around the Grand America.
I'm still pretty good at it, so I could totally do that. But they're not my skates; it's my sister's skates, because my feet got too big after I had kids. So I inherited my sister's skates, which makes her so upset that she can't wear them. But anyway, that's another story.
Nicole,
but anyways,
can you skate? Are you a?
I can't. Are you a blade? Oh gosh, don't put me in skates. I have some roller blades, but I haven't really practiced that much. I'm just learning to use them.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, you don't imagine how much shin involvement there is, but there's a lot of shin involvement. It's very strange. So and it turns out if you don't skate from the time you're like 14 until you're, you know, like in your mid 30s, your body changes a lot.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. Like gravity works different. So I found out the hard way, but yeah. So that was a little bit about the like little me. You know, I wanted to be a veterinarian. So when Jennifer mentioned being a veterinarian, I'm like, yes, the like Midwestern, like teenage girl dream. Same reason I cannot like euthanize a cat or frankly cut one open. So that was not a dream that was going to happen for me.
Yeah, that's tough.
I would think like large animal vet in your neighborhood.
Yeah, we could probably do large animal, but although, you know, like growing up in Des Moines, there weren't a lot of like, there's not a lot of farm, you know, like we're like I'm in the, it's the city.
That's true. That's true.
But you know, I did have some friends with large animals, and currently my neighbor has some baby goats. So there's that, excitement going on, but yeah. So yeah, I was, you know, it's just a kind of geeky kid in the Midwest. And, in the '80s, Apple gave Apple IIcs to all the high school or all the schools, kind of hook kids on Macs, which totally worked on me, by the way.
On the Oregon Trail.
On the Oregon Trail, which is like
the sole purpose of an Apple IIe was like, so you could boot that puppy up, get on the Oregon Trail, and hopefully not die of dysentery.
Exactly. Yeah. I died of dysentery a lot, or I forget to bring enough arrows, and when we played, we were still on the green and black monitors. So, so that was always really exciting. And then, so in eighth grade, I don't know what class it was. It was really no class. It was just kind of like, oh, we don't know what to do with you for a period, so go in the computer lab. And that's when I started writing BASIC. And so I wrote a very elaborate animation app where I was plotting points and telling a little story. I wrote that whole thing out, and it was like, I really enjoyed it. I felt like it was
taking some effort.
Oh yeah. I worked on it for a long time. And I just really loved it. It clicked with me. I understood it. And then I got to high school and they kept all the computers locked because no one knew how to teach them. And so I just sort of like dropped it. And then at some point, like became like a teenage girl that's like, computers are dumb. And so,
That was pretty good. Yeah. That was pretty good. That almost sounded like Anna from Inventing Anna.
Oh, yeah. You look par. So, yeah, I very much, that's probably one of my biggest regrets is that we didn't really have the opportunity to keep learning. And then when I got to, you know, so I made it through high school, only learning how to type on the computer. You know, my brother had a computer, but he was a nerd and I didn't want to hang out with him. So, but by the time I got into college, so I have a botany degree, a Bachelor of Science in Botany, because at one point I thought, well, I want to be a vet, but I don't want to cut up animals, so maybe I can cut up plants.
That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have a botany degree, which really
I don't see any plants behind you. You have a skeleton. Okay,
they're over by the window. I have ridiculous.
Okay, because she actually knows how to take care of plants.
Yeah, she's like, no, they're by the window.
More so, I know how to identify the weeds out in the yard. So
sounds really helpful.
Yeah, it is kind of nice because I'll be like, oh, we can eat that, we can't eat that, you know. And the kids always thought that was fun growing up. And I can identify plants like while we're driving along. They're like, oh, look, there's some parsnip. Let's not touch that. And like some of that kind of stuff. But so I got this botany degree and then I really didn't know what to do with it because the two paths are really like, do you want to go? Actually, the one path is really, no, there's two. Do you want to go work for a seed company or do you want to go teach?
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't really want to do either of those things. Really, in my heart, I am an artist and I'm okay waiting tables for the rest of my life. If I'm just going to live art. And so I went then and got a Bachelor of Fine Arts in painting.
Did you? Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that is incredible.
Yeah, so I have my Bachelor of Fine Arts in painting. And while I was at the University of Iowa getting that, I sort of realized that I hated waiting tables and working in food service because I didn't like to smell like bologna all the time. And so I started learning. Back then, it was the Macromedia products. And so I learned
like Dreamweaver, Flash.
Dreamweaver, Flash. Director. Yeah. I know Director.
Oh, Director. That's right.
Yeah.
What was Director?
Director was like
Flash. It outputted Flash. It still did like a Swift.
It could output Flash. Yeah. It actually outputted. I can't remember what file type it outputted. Maybe it was just a Swift file, but you could use it. Actually, what people were using it for at the time, you could interact with actual hardware. Like you could interface with like stamps and stuff and get it to control real world devices. So for a while there were websites where you could like plant something in a garden and it was using Director as an interface between the computer and the the little robot thing.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
I used it to make very weird art, and so that's what I used Director for.
Perfect.
But I also learned, you know, I learned Photoshop and I learned Dreamweaver, kind of just picked up enough digital skills to have jobs that weren't just always in food service. And then I decided I needed to spend even more money and I got a Master of Fine Arts from CalArts. So I have a MFA
You went down the, I'm going to spend a lot of money on degrees training.
Yes, exactly. And CalArts now is very expensive. And back when I went, it was still very expensive. And I, you know, like $77,000 later, like I have this degree in art and integrated media. So then I used that to, you know, do graphic design with my aunt in California. And so I did that, the obvious choice, right? Which was good because I had learned Photoshop. I'd learned enough about, like, I picked up Illustrator pretty easily. And I was sort of her web design person. And so I was doing a lot of HTML and CSS with her. And then I had our second kid in Los Angeles, and that's very expensive. And so that was 2007. And we moved back to Des Moines in 2007, and then the economy crashed, and every single graphic designer in town got laid off because they were the obvious first choice. They're like, well, we don't need anything to look good. And so they laid off all the designers. And so I was competing for jobs back home with everybody else who had already had jobs in town. And my experience was working for my aunt. And I'm like, oh, so this is like... It was frustrating. And so I ended up starting my own business. And so I ran a crafting business for 8 years.
Wow.
I was fairly successful on Etsy. I made stockings and balls and like all this stuff. And then I realized just how much I really deeply hated making stuff for people. And and I had a friend of mine who was running, he was an IT director in St. Louis, and they needed a software engineer. They kept hiring people, and they like one guy had been on the job for 2 years. And there was literally one piece of code that was still being used, like that was like in production ever. Nothing else ever made it to production because it was just, his code was just not, we don't actually know what he was doing. So he'd go to his office and then he would leave. But like in the middle, we don't know what was happening because there was no evidence of work. And that went on for 2 years. And so they luckily were able to let him go. And they hired me knowing that I had no experience and that I could do HTML and CSS, but I did not know how to write ASP.NET web forms, which is what they were doing at the time.
Gotcha.
And so, that's where I got my start. And then it kind of just took off from there. So
that's awesome.
Wow. You have such a rich history.
I like, you know, when somebody's like, hey, you're going to be a software engineer. I'm like, what's the like most complicated path to get there? I'm going to start here. I'm going to go way over here. And then I'm going to cross and go way over there. And then I'm going to go upside down. I'm going to do a few backflips. And then, okay, now I'm a software engineer. So yeah, it was kind of a funny, you know, and I feel like everything I experienced has really informed who I am as a software engineer.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, waiting tables, like I'm actually really good at talking to people when I have to. Mm-hmm. I can communicate with people. Botany, you know, like writing those scientific papers, if you're going to write documentation, it has to be terse. It has to be like, you can't use a lot of like flowery metaphors. You just need to say what's happening. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, you know, I'm still training for what I ended up being. Painting, I always say, and painting was always like, don't be so precious about your painting. So like if you're painting something and you're like, I love this spot, I have to keep it. And you'll like ruin your whole painting just to keep this one spot. And I find that the same thing happens in code where you're like, I'm writing this code, I love this one thing I wrote, this is perfect. And you're like, you'll like literally do the most ridiculous backward stuff to maintain this one bit of code. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and really you should have thrown it away like 2 days ago. And so I always, that's one mantra I've really kept with me is just stop being precious about that. Like, don't be precious about your work. Just do what makes sense. Yeah. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
What an awesome story. So how did Angular enter all of this? So you're doing
ASP.NET, web
crushing
forms.
It with web
in
forms.
Visual Basic.
Visual Basic 6.
I can't remember exactly how it works out. Whatever visual,
fantastic.
Yeah, it was fine. But honestly, that's actually how I learned C#, because you can't find answers in Visual Basic really on Stack Overflow. It's always in C#. And so I would find the answer in C# and then translate it to Visual Basic. And then after about a year of that, I was like, this is stupid and I'm not doing this anymore. We are writing all new code in C#
and .NET. Yeah.
And .NET. So we're like, we're not doing this anymore. And then, and of course that company was based in St. Louis. And so I would go to, it used to be Days of .NET conference down there. Now it's DevUp. That was a conference that my company would send me to. And so I started going to that conference and that's where I learned about Angular. And Angular 2 was just starting to come out at that time. And I went to this talk and they showed the two-way binding and it just like blew my mind. Cause I'm
that
like,
two-way binding demo gets you every time.
Oh my God. I was like, you mean I don't have to like manage this? I don't have to like go like document get element by ID anymore. Like I can just like,
you
can just put a banana in a box.
Yeah.
Just
like
the old banana in a box. Good to go.
Totally blown mind. Yeah. And yeah. And so that's why, like, that's how Angular got on my radar really. And it seemed to be like a good direction to go. It was a good fit with the .NET code I was writing. There's a lot of information on it that way. And then there was a lot of people in St. Louis that were doing .NET code. And so it just kind of made sense. Yeah. And then I ended up at the conference because my company at the time did not want to give me the raise I wanted. And so I'm like, fine, then you're going to send me this conference. And they did. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I ended
up there. Off you go to Salt Lake.
Off I went to Salt Lake City and like
in 2017, right?
2017. Yep. And I got there and they gave me my hoodie and I put on my hoodie and I'm like, I am with my
people.
That was
it.
Yeah. Like these are my people. I've never in my life wanted to join anything. I am like the person that they're like, this is popular. And I'm like, then I don't like it. Like I'm just that, like I am a contrarian to the core, but for some reason, when I got to that conference, I'm like, yes, let's do this
thing. NGConf hoodie.
NGConf changed you.
It changed me.
Changed you at your core.
It did. And so, yeah, I ended up, and it kind of also, honestly, it made me feel better about who I was, like just getting to talk to people and being like, oh, I'm actually not a terrible developer. Cause the thing I forgot to mention about this other job was I was the only developer on staff. So I was alone and I didn't know how to write code. There would be like, I would go weeks without talking to anybody from work. I was also working remotely. So it was just like me in my office, like beating my head on books, reading Stack Overflow, like taking naps because it was so overwhelming.
.NET for dummies.
.NET for dummies. I had the like big, like the real big one that was like very thick. Was like somewhat helpful, but like, I'm just glad I don't learn code that way anymore. Cause that's not my favorite way to learn things, but I figured out a lot of stuff. And I actually, by the time I left that first job, I had moved their stack to C#. I was moving them into .NET core. They didn't quite make it. They had this seed that wasn't ready. And so we had to keep some of the code not there, but it's sort of like pushing them in this direction. They had a little bit of Angular. And then I ended up working for a consultancy, and that's honestly that's what you were talking about, Nicole, like working for a consultancy. It really does change who you are. And that's really when the trajectory of my career really took off, because I finally had people to ask questions of. And in fact, the first retro I went through, one of my teammates, we didn't have to, but it was polite to say something about everybody. And he called me a fearless questioner. And
I would consider that a compliment.
I did. I really did. Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll take that. Like that feels good. That is who I am. And so I've kind of just like, that is the label I apply to myself sort of in the back of my head, is like, I'm a fearless questioner. Like, I will ask the questions that make me feel dumb. I will ask the questions that that people seem to be afraid to ask.
That's awesome.
So
that's very cool. I've asked everybody what they struggled the most with in their career, and I'm interested to hear your answer with all of that. What
direction? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's okay. Like, that's fine. I mean,
Like,
you figure it out, right?
But as a developer, I'd say the thing I struggled the most with was, honestly, since I did not have a computer science background, it was the language. like just understanding like
the jargon.
Yeah, the jargon. Like, yeah. What do I even, here's what's broken. I can see what's broken. How do I even Google it? Like, what words do I type into Google to find my answer? And so I would just go through and I would Google. And if I got close, I would pay attention to how the questions were being worded on Stack Overflow, like what people were saying in the answers. And then I would remember, and then I would do that next time. When I would go to conferences, I would, you know, half the time I did not know what, like, especially the first one I ever went to, I didn't know half the stuff they were talking about. I didn't even know what they meant. I didn't know what source control was. We had source control, but nobody called it that. So I didn't know that's what it was called. And so, you know, and it took me like 2 years to finally figure out how to Google what a ternary operator was. Because how do you Google
operator? This thing with a question mark and a colon in it.
You can't just throw that into Google.
It just like, I'm like, I don't know. And then finally somebody said the word ternary operator and I'm like, oh God, okay, that's what it is. You know, and I write it down. And most of the first few conferences I went to, I would just write down words and then go Google them later when I felt less embarrassed. Cause at that point I was a somewhat bashful questioner. it was just learning that. And then that actually the podcasts, I started listening to podcasts and that's really what kind of took off, because you can hear people talking about the code, their technology, their specific specialty, and you learn how they talk about it. So you can learn how the documentation is written. You can learn how people are going to be Googling about it. And it just really, that really helped. That has really helped me take off, but I still get like a little bit anxious because I'm worried I'm using the words wrong or, you know, like function and method. I still like every day I'm like, is it a function? Is it a method? Am I doing the wrong thing? And I argue with myself. Yeah. And now I'm trying not to just care anymore. Cause I'm like, you know what I'm talking about, but I know there's just some nerd out there that's like, it's function. Yeah. You mean function.
So. I've definitely struggled with that in my career too. Cause I was not formally trained. I did a lot of like self education and like a mentor or like colleague education. Mm-hmm. So I oftentimes am asking my partner who like got a computer science degree, like, am I saying this right? Like, how do I refer to this? And it's helpful to have like people around you that like can help you like describe what you're trying to do so you can like type it into Google.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause not being able to like figure, like honestly, just figuring out how to Google is like, if you can figure out what to Google, you're like half the way there, and then you just have to sort through the terrible answers and find the right one. So
right.
That's awesome. So you got connected with the Angular community in I guess it was before then, but like you went to the conference in 2017. Mm-hmm. And then you started working, I think you said, at a consulting company. Was it in Des Moines or where?
It's in Urbandale. It was Source Allies. Yep, Source Allies in Urbandale. And they're just a local tech.
Local shop.
Tech consultancy. Yeah. But they have some really great clients. I got the opportunity to work with a fairly large regional grocery chain. I worked with a couple of Fortune 500 financial planning companies. Cool. Des Moines has a lot of insurance companies. They have a lot of there's a lot of headquarters here. And so, you know, like we've got like seed companies, we've got insurance companies.
So you ended up working for the seed companies anyways, is what
I actually never did. That is like the one thing I never did. Only sort of like a sideways. I worked on I spent a couple months on an app that we had developed for one of the seed companies. I worked on it like between projects.
I was wondering if they got you anyways.
So it does come full circle.
It does come full circle. Yeah. You just can't even help yourself. So I started doing that. And then I realized if I wanted to go back to ngConf, it was going to be easier if I just was speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I do for myself every year is when I set goals, I try to set three types of goals for myself. I set the easy ones that I know I can achieve. I set the ones that are like, I think I can achieve that, or I'm pretty sure I can achieve that. And then I set the ones that scare me to death. And I try to at least set one of those for myself. And speaking at the conference was my scare me to death goal. And I just kind of treat it like, you know, when you get to the top of that big water slide and you're like, oh crap, I either go back down the ladder or I go down the slide. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, I'm going down the slide. And you know,
take
you
take a deep breath.
Yeah. You take a deep breath and like all the way down, you're like, I'm dying. Oh God. And, but you know, then you get to the bottom and you're like, okay, so that was okay. Let's try that again. And, yeah. So yeah, that was sort of, I just happened to get accepted in 2020. And, yeah. Of course then that we had a pandemic.
Wait, what happened, Laura? Tell us what happened in 2020.
So my talk was a workshop for the track days. Oh, and okay. it was called Little App of Horrors. And it was So it was about putting NGRX into an existing app. Okay. And just like cleaning up the state management, right?
Okay.
And so it was a nice little talk. I could barely get it in an hour because I had an hour to do it. And it was just like, okay, like nothing can go wrong. I just have to like blood and guts through this thing. And I had like, I got it, get all written. I had it all ready to go. I had been like practicing it in the car. Like I was ready. And then the pandemic, you know, every day, like the pandemic situation was just getting worse and worse and worse. And the conference organizers, like they weren't quite able to cancel the conference yet because of the hotel. And so like, they're like, well, we'll just have just the speakers out. And I'm like, okay, I'm on, let's go. And I was like, honestly, when they canceled it and just went virtual, it was probably like one of the most, it was a good decision. It made me very relieved because I was very nervous about everything. But the sad part was that since they went single track, my workshop
Little App of Horrors got cut.
Yeah. Little App of Horrors got cut, but the silver lining was that Alec Akrushko has a nice little meetup going in Toronto. Oh, yeah. The Angular Toronto.
That's not a little meetup. It's a pretty big meetup. Nice little meetup.
And he reached out and offered to let me give that workshop.
Nice.
At that meetup. And nice. I did. And then the rest is sort of history. And so, yeah.
That's so awesome.
He really is. He really is. He's very good at like just finding people. He knows who to lift up, I think, you know.
Yeah. And
he's also trying to get that Cisco referral money, I think.
Which he ultimately did, because now I work for Alex at Cisco. So
it paid off.
Totally played the long game.
He played the long game. So yeah. But yeah. So that's kind of how that went. And so yeah, now here I am. Somehow I've tricked you into letting me on the podcast, and we're gonna have so much fun.
yeah, it's gonna be good fun. We're definitely gonna be learning a lot together and hanging out, and it's already been so fun to get to meet you, and of course Nicole, everybody get to spend time with each other. It's really fun. So we have a very exciting season coming with some new guests and some new content and lots of exciting things happening. So,
Brian, I don't know that I've ever heard your origin story.
So when I was 12,
it also starts with rollerblades.
I actually got really into rollerblading when I was 12.
Did you?
My neighbor had, so my driveway, we had a paved driveway. I grew up in like a very small town, but it was like one of these like planned communities type of like thing. But I grew up in a very small town. In fact, it's such a small town. The name of the town is called Big Flats, New York, which just sounds small. Right. It's like right. Somebody like, was no, on a I'm hill. Big. They're like, oh, right there's a big flat area. And that's what they named it. But my drive, yeah, exactly. It's kind of weird. But my driveway was sloped. But I had a friend of mine that grew up two doors down from me, and he had a flat driveway. And flat driveway is where it's at if you want to do any sort of rollerblading. And so we used to play tons of like hockey, you know?
Oh,
like,
nice.
Yeah. So I too am versed in the skating world. But,
that's right.
But that was the straight wheels, not the other ones.
Right, the quads. Yeah.
No, I guess, you know, funny enough, I think my story kind of Similarly to you, Laura, kind of dates back to a similar era. I remember doing like Apple IIe and all of that. I did BASIC as well, though I did not make anything as elaborate as what you described. I think I made a pinwheel, you know, like you tell it to go like up, turn 45 degrees, go down, turn 45 degrees, and so I did a little bit of that. And then I don't know, I just got sucked into the creativity side of it, like how you were describing, Nicole. I really enjoyed like writing something and then looking and seeing what I could create with it, like the creativity of like, oh, I can put this on the screen. So similar story with like CSS, quote unquote, HTML, and just kind of started dabbling in it. I had no idea what I was doing with JavaScript. I don't even know if these sites exist, but you used to be able to go to like these websites that just had like tons of like JavaScript snippets that you could just like copy paste into your app to do something. Yeah. Like a menu or a thing or whatever it was. I had no idea what the code was, but I was like, copy, paste, boom, look, look what I did.
Yeah.
Cross-site scripting attack. Yay.
It'll be okay. So I kind of just, I don't know. I found it all very fascinating and interesting. And so I just found different projects, kind of like what Jennifer was saying, like making a website for friends or making a website. I was in Boy Scouts when I was a kid, so like I made a website for my troop or whatever it was and stuff, you know? So I just kind of started dabbling that way. And I was like, this is really fun.
Did you have a MySpace page with like, you know, like the song and like the flashing lights? And
oh, yeah. You know, I had a visitor count thing at the bottom, a little under construction.
Mine auto played Monster Mash. You know, it was cool.
Yeah. probably dating myself, but I don't know. It was a fun time to grow up, like, and because the internet was like such a newish blossoming thing of like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, like Internet Explorer 3, dial up, you know, AOL, all that stuff. I still remember like I'd set up a queue on like Napster to like download like, you know, songs overnight. If you're lucky, you could get like 4 or 5 songs overnight. Yes. You get up in the morning and you'd be like, oh, it's they crashed or somebody picked up the phone.
You're like, mom called somebody.
it's like, damn it, I gotta start all over. It's like an hour to download 5 megs. So I guess I kind of just dabbled into similar to the web. I think that's what's cool about web development is now I know it's definitely changed and it is definitely a much more complex thing to get into today. But back in the day, you could just view source and you could look at somebody's source code and you could see what it was and you could probably piece it together and try to do something similar, right?
Yeah.
You could kind of just muck your way through it.
And if you could do that, you were like a wizard and people are like, oh my God, you can make websites.
Yep. And people pay you like $20.
That's
you
spend
hours. Hours. Eventually kind of made my way into high school and I went to a Catholic high school, so they didn't really have a lot of like resources for like computers, but I took every single computer class they had. Because why not? And so kind of got through that. And at the time I kind of knew, I was like, I want to go into software. I want to be a programmer. Boot camps didn't exist. Like there was basically one way to become a software developer and that was college. I do have kind of a more quote unquote traditional story in terms of becoming a developer. So I ended up going to the State University of New York Institute of Technology, which is a mouthful, or just SUNY IT at the time.
Okay, what's its letters? Yeah.
SUNY, State University of New York Institute of Technology, so SUNY IT. It just was like a natural thing kind of for me. Though I will say like I certainly struggled because while I was mostly self-taught up until then, you go to computer science school and they want you writing bubble sorts and algorithms and some of the stuff. And you're just like,
this isn't the fun thing I wanted to do.
Yeah, this isn't as fun. It's a different experience. So I definitely enjoyed it and the challenge was good. But I still always kind of loved the web. In computer science school, this would have been like 2005. Like the web wasn't really like a serious programming thing. And so they literally had, of the entire 4-year degree, there was one web development class that I got to take.
Oh, wow.
Like everything else was Java, C++, terminal, command line. I mean, just, you know, knocking it out, very traditional approach.
Yeah. So. Back then, the back end and the front end were just so deeply divided. And
yeah, and really, I mean, JavaScript was a joke, basically. It was like, needed it maybe to do something, but
you talk to any serious backend developer and they're just like, JavaScript. Like there would literally like every conference would be like, no, really, JavaScript. Yeah. Like every talk.
I mean, and for what it's worth, like that's what I saw to get a job, you know, you just write backend code. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. Similar to you, my first job, and this also kind of dates myself. So I went to SUNY IT. Down the road was a private school called Hamilton College, which was actually one of the founders was Alexander Hamilton of this college. And they had an opening for like an internship. And a buddy of mine, I was a senior in college. A buddy of mine was like, hey, are you interested in this internship? And I was like, sure. He's like, and they pay. And this was also a while ago, but it was like $10 an hour. And I was like, what?
You're rolling around with money, like double digits per hour.
And I could do this. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what kind of stuff do you do? And they're like, we use this thing called Adobe Cold Fusion. I guess it was Macromedia Cold Fusion back in the day. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, it's this weird like tag-ish thing on top of Java. And I was like, all right, fine, sure, whatever.
right.
Like, I don't care. All right, you know. And so that was kind of my first professional job, was working at Hamilton College. Great people to work with, a great place to kind of learn and grow. And so I did that for a couple of years. And then eventually, you know, kind of got into kind of, you know, more front end and doing Angular JS, you know, Angular comes out. So kind of the rest is history, I suppose.
What brought Angular to your attention? Like what?
Yeah, so I was working at the time when I actually reached out to AngularJS. I went to a tech conference. I don't even remember the name of it. Maybe it was, this was back when Ajax was coming out, and there was actually conferences like Ajax. And I remember going to like a conference on like Ajax. And so, you know, we were writing all this like jQuery, you know, all this kind of stuff. And even before then, like prototype.js and some of these like weird frameworks that no longer exist. And when somebody did a demo, again, that two-way data binding gets you, man.
Like
they did this demo of AngularJS. And I was like, yeah, this is a lot better than what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Like, I'm like struggle busting with the DOM. And I was like, I can just bind them. And I just thought, oh, that's really interesting. So I was working for a small company at the time that did technical training. And I was the CTO of the company, but also did a lot of the development. We only had like two developers, and myself included. And so I was like, this is going to save us a ton of time. We should totally do this AngularJS thing. So we kind of brought AngularJS into the stack, if you will, in terms of like some of the forms, and we had a CMS and a backend and all that kind of stuff. And so it just made a lot of sense. So.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, it really was a game changer at that time. So, or at least it felt like it.
Yeah.
And it was hard. I think it was hard too. Like there was, I remember one person saying like Angular is that mountain, like the unclimbable mountain or something. And it made me feel cool that I was like, oh yeah, well, I know how to use it.
Yeah. You would definitely get yourself in trouble with like,
Oh yeah.
You know, dollar root scope and broadcasting and all that stuff.
I wrote
some foot guns.
I wrote one AngularJS app, and it was, I'm actually really glad the repo got deleted, because it was frightening. It had one component, or you know, like one like place where all the script God lived.
Component. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I broke it up into different methods, but like, it was,
were they methods or functions?
I don't even know. That's just it. So.
Yeah. So, and then I went to ngConf in 2016. I was like, I want to learn this new thing of Angular. Of course, I thought it was really exciting because it felt like kind of going more traditional, kind of similar to a lot of the stories that you hear, like people come from C Sharp or Java. You look at like TypeScript and Angular, you've got, you know, decorators, annotations, if you will, and you've got classes and you've got, you know, setters and getters or whatever, and these kinds of things.
Dependency
like,
injection.
Oh, yeah, dependency, right? All this kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, this is cool. So it kind of, for me, was like, oh, this is great. This reminds me a lot of some of the backend code. And, you know, so then really kind of latched onto that. So I was like, this is fantastic. So I actually made it a pretty big point not to write AngularJS after that. So
yeah.
I literally haven't touched AngularJS in years. Like, I remember Frosty one time was like, you want to do a contract with an AngularJS upgrade? I was like, bruh, I don't even remember AngularJS. Like,
right.
I have no idea.
Not relearning that. No thanks.
It was like 5 years ago. So
yeah. That's cool. So I know that all of us have sort of stated what our biggest challenges have been. So you coming from a totally different background, as far as just like you actually have a computer science degree, what have been your biggest challenges?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think probably the biggest challenges for me is I also have an MBA, and so I'm very interested in business. And so sometimes I think I struggle between like, you know, do I go down this path of making something like highly technical versus being like, okay, pump the brakes here. Like, this is good enough. Like, we need to ship this thing. And so I definitely am your classic over engineer, you know, like just not necessary. I'm like, oh, then we're going to do this. And then we're going to do that. And this,
right.
And I remember when I was working at Hamilton College, like on my like first or second, like performance review, it was like, Brian, you're making it too complicated. Like, nobody wants to touch the code after you've touched it. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to. I know. You're the Rube Goldberg of.
I just have a tendency. I don't know why. I just want to over-engineer the crap
out
of it.
It's anything. Hard to hear that too, because like you just think like, I put so much thought into this. Like, I thought about every pathway.
Right. And how does this not make sense to you? This goes to this, to this.
Actually legit like upset. I remember. Oh, yeah. I was like, how could you? What? I'm too good at my job. Like, that's right. My performance review.
Right.
Obviously, looking back at it now, I could be a little humble and say, yeah, Brian, you over-engineered the crap out of that. You
know? Right. Yeah.
And I apologize for, hopefully that code is long dead. I hope nobody has to maintain that code. If somebody does, it's probably terrible.
Oh yeah. I think we've all got that, like that code in the closet that you're like, hope nobody opens that door.
It's worse when you're the one that opens the door.
Yeah, and you're like, who did this?
You get like blame. You're like, oh,
So my solution for that is that I have ego. I have an alter ego, and her name is Lara, and she's the one that did it. So because it's spelled the same way. So yeah, I'm like, oh, Lara. And I actually had a coworker who thought Lara was the way you said my name because I was always yelling at Lara for doing bad things. <That's funny. laughs> So yeah, maybe you can have brain does the bad code.
There you go.
So yeah. You've been on Angular, you've been, when it was the Angular show, you were obviously involved, and now moving towards Angular Plus show, what are you the most excited about?
I'm really excited to, first of all, have both of you join us. And I'm also really excited to kind of broaden the scope. I think in the past, you know, we've really focused on Angular, and I don't think that's going to go away. But I want to talk about and learn about things that are Angular adjacent. Like, okay, Angular has a dependency on RxJS. I personally like RxJS. What about RxJS in React, RxJS in Svelte, or how does RxJS kind of fit into other, kind of how can I expand my knowledge into some of these other kind of neighboring areas? And so I think that's going to hopefully be a big part of the show going forward. That's part of the rebrand, is we're going to talk about Angular, but we're also going to talk about things in Angular plus other stuff. So I'm really excited to kind of take that new direction.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting. I know that there's a lot of parallels you can draw between libraries and frameworks. And I think that the broader your knowledge is, the deeper your understanding can be even of what you're writing now, you know? So understanding something more about React, maybe you'll actually understand something better about Angular because you're hearing about it in a different way. So
yeah, I always love learning about stuff like that and just seeing where the parallels are and what the differences are.
Yeah, definitely. And especially like RxJS, I think in Angular, we're like, oh, hey, it's a RxJS. Obviously we're going to use that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you go to React and people are like, why would we use that? We have promises. They're fine. You know? And then they're like, I need to solve this problem. That's like a problem I could solve with RxJS, but I refuse to listen to you. You know? So it's interesting to kind of realize that the outside world is a very different place sometimes. So, yeah.
I mean, I'll let you and the listeners in on a little secret, but I'm actually writing a React project.
Gasp!
Oh my gosh.
Well, I'm glad, because there needs to be more examples about that. I was on a React project for like a year and a half, and I'm like, y'all, we need some RxJS up in here. Like, this is, every problem that they wanted to solve. I'm like, well, we could use RxJS for that, or you could keep doing whatever this is. And, you know,
yeah.
It was just, it's hard. So yeah, having more examples out there, I think is a good, solid approach.
I agree.
So maybe we can have Brian Love on to talk about his React app, his traitorous React app.
Heretic. I mean, the reality is you can really, if you know Angular, you can go and do React pretty quickly. Plus functional components are pretty nice.
Yeah. And there's just some really basic concepts that exist anywhere. Yeah. Like, why do we have these frameworks? It's to manage our change detection, right? Like before we had any of these, we were doing like some crazy, like we do full postbacks and like, you know, so it's like we're managing our state and it's just how you manage your state. And
Yep.
Well, very cool.
Yeah. So shall we wrap up? I think I just want to say thank you so much to everybody for listening to the show. Totally looking forward to continuing kind of this journey with Jennifer. And it's very exciting to bring Lara and Nicole to have you guys kind of join us on this journey.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm excited. And so real quick, because people may not know you, Nicole, if somebody wants to follow you on Twitter or get in touch with you, or what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, Twitter's probably the best way to get in touch. My DMs are open, and my handle is NIX codes, CODES.
NIX codes.
So you can get in touch with me there.
Fantastic. How about you, Laura? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Twitter is also sort of the best way. My DMs are also open, and I am Lara Nerdsom. It's Lara Nerdsom. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And to the listener, we will see you next time. And thank you for listening.
Well, that's another episode of the Angular Plus Show. Our hosts are Lara Newsom, Jennifer Wadella, Nicole Oliver, and Brian Love. Thank you to our producers, Brianne Smithia and Loyal Carlin, our founders, Joe Eames and Aaron Frost, the entire ngComp team, and all of our sponsors and subscribers for making this episode of the Angular Plus Show possible. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for a future episode, contact us at theangularplusshow.com/contact or reach out to us on Twitter at @AngularShow. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Angular Plus Show.